education of our children doesn't begin and end at academia. There is a spiritual responsibility on each parent and teacher to nurture and train a young soul spiritually. This is called Chinuch. Join Rabbi G every Monday at 2 p.m. as he explores education and Chinuch for parents and teachers. Torah isn't education, it's transformation.
What a 1.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday between 2 to 3, where we discuss education, we discuss Chinuch, we discuss anything that will actually impact our lives, from medical, health, education, planning, politics, really anything that will give us a better life, anything that will influence us to be better people and to be the people we want to be in the world we want to be living in. So, hoping you all had a good weekend and a very meaningful fast, as well as already for the next month coming up. And today we have a very important topic, because we are going to have the International Youth Day happening this month at the 12th of August, which is not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow on August 12th. And planning always comes in earlier. And what we're going to be talking about is the financial side of things. Every parent wants their children to grow up and to be independent adults. Every parent wants their children to have the tools they need to be sophisticated, to be looking after a family, looking after themselves, to be independent in the world. And we send them to school, and we send them to whatever we can for them to learn and grow. However, financial planning and managing your finances, as well as finding a job, is the reality of our nation, and what's happening is a very important topic that we are going to unpack today. So be with us now as we go into our interviews. And I'm going to share shortly with you as well the number if you want to message us or want to ask our professionals any question. But we are going to be talking today about finances. And I'm going to introduce you to our guest today on the show. Firstly, I'm going to introduce you to Desiree Menemele. She is the Chief Director of Labor Statistics in Statistics South Africa. Good afternoon, Desiree. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, sir. I'm happy to be here.
Okay. So before we go into the discussion, and I'm going to introduce the guest, tell us a bit about you, your role, your position, what you do. Let's get to know you a bit.
Yes. Like you have mentioned, I'm a Chief Director for Labor Statistics here at Statistics South Africa. My responsibilities is to ensure that at the end of every quarter, unemployment rate is produced, the numbers of the people that are employed and those that are inactive are published and are heard by the public. And we also produce other modules of the labor market, things like the volunteer work, child labor, time use surveys in the informal sector. We also produce some of the employment data from the business side, where we collect data from the businesses and ask them about it, the number of employees they have, as well as their gross earnings. That's basically it.
That's a lot. There's a lot of information that you are holding, and so many different topics. I actually am fascinating with. We'll see where we go with this in this topic and discussion. I also want to introduce you to Michelle Benatar, who is a financial advisor, and you train people for many decades of how to plan and how to make. I guess after we hear from Desiree about getting a job, we also need to know how to manage our finances. It's not enough to have a job, so let's get to know you a bit more.
Okay, so my name's Michelle Benatar. I have been in the industry for 40 years. In fact, the 1st of August this year was my anniversary, 40 years in the business.
Wow.
So I'm a financial planner. I help individuals and companies, individuals to plan for, in terms of risk, medical aids, retirement, estate planning, and I help businesses in terms of partnership cover, contingent liabilities, and you buy and sell agreements, and so on and so forth.
Amazing. Okay, so before we go into this discussion, I'm just going to tell anyone who's listening, if you want to comment, ask questions, say something about work, about finances, about anything you want to know for our youth, please send us a WhatsApp at 061-895-1019. You can WhatsApp us with any question, any comment, 061-895-1019. So, Michelle, I'm guessing that for you to start financial planning is in a way based on the reality of the person having a job and having some income. And what I want to ask you, Desiree, how realistic is that for our youth when we look at employment for them? What can we predict for them in the next 5-10 years regarding employment in South Africa?
I cannot make any predictions, but what I can tell you is what we have already collected from the field. Because okay. Maybe just a little background of the survey that I'm going to talk about. We're talking about the quarterly labor force survey. It is a survey of households. We go to households, we ask them questions about their employment status, unemployment status, but it's a series of questions that we'll ask them that when, at the end of the day, we classify them into the three labor market statuses, which is employment, unemployment, and out of the labor force. Now, in the last quarter that we published, which was the first quarter of 2025, unfortunately, we are having this interview today, but the fortunate thing for us is that quarter two is coming out next week, so,
Okay, great. We're going to have a great surprise next week.
Yeah, but and unfortunately, I cannot talk about quarter two. I can only talk about what we've already published. So when we look at the first quarter of 2025, what we found was that out of the 41 million people that are in the working age population, that is 15 to 64, about 16.8 million were in employment, meaning they had a job, paid job, or they had a business, right? And the data also shows that about 8.2 million did not have a job, meaning they did not have employment. They searched for a job in the reference period, and they were available to take up a job if should anyone, provide it to them. And on top of that, 41 million people of working age, we also have a group that we call the discouraged work seekers and the other not economically active population. These are the people who say, I do not want to work because I did not search for a job, and I'm not available to take up a job, or I'm available, but during the reference period when I was asked these questions, I was not available. Some of them mentioned that they were discouraged, meaning that they have lost hope of finding employment, or they do not have transport money to go out there and look for employment, or they have a sickness or a disability that, stops them from looking for employment. Now, we found the unemployment rate in the first quarter standing at 32.9%. And of that 32.9%, we found that the youth, we talk about the youth 15 to 34, their unemployment rate stood at 44.6%.
Wow.
Should I go for
No, I'm. You're actually scaring me. But the question is that I want to ask you is, I want to go back to the comment you made about the 8.2 million people who are job seekers that are not finding job compared to the 1 million that are actually not really interested. That means that roughly, and I'm not going to do the calculation here right this moment, but roughly between, I'd say 12 to 15% are actually not interested in getting jobs. But that means that we have a good 85% of the people that are really trying to get jobs and are not managing. Out of that 85%, do you know the difference between youth and older people?
We have, in terms of the youth, if you look at the, over a decade, let's say from 2015 to 2025, youth unemployment rate was 36.9% in in 2015. Now in the current quarter one, 2025, it is standing at 46.1%. Now, if you look at the 8.2 million that I have mentioned, of that number that is unemployed, 4.8 million are youth, 15 to 34.
Wow.
And may I ask you, in terms of those 8.2 million, what percentage of the whole population is unemployed?
Remember, the working age population is defined as those people that are aged 15 years and above.
Yes.
Right. Now, the 41 million that I had mentioned is the working age population, that is 15 to 64. In our case, we publish working age population as those that are 15 to 64. But the International Labour Organization has advised that we should, the working age population is defined as 15 years, anybody 15 years and above.
Right. Right.
Wow.
Now, if we are saying that 8.2 million are unemployed, meaning they did not have a job, they searched for a job, and they were available to take up a job should the job be offered to them. That is 8.2 million of therefore 41 million working age population.
So it's almost a fifth.
In a way.
Yes, but remember, I think that sometimes there's a confusion when, especially when we come to the unemployment rate, right? The definition of unemployment rate is the proportion of the proportion that is unemployed that is in the labor force,
right,
not that is in the working age population. Now, what is our labor force? Our labor force is the people that are unemployed plus the people that are employed. Together, they make up about 25 million. Right. So when we calculate the unemployment rate, we take our numerator will be number of people that are unemployed divided by the number of people that are in the labor force, not in the working age population.
Right.
Because remember, for you to be unemployed, you must have searched, you must be available.
And searched means that through the official channels, not necessarily on your own.
We have different methods of searching.
So you know
what? Shown an active way of looking for employment.
Wow.
Like you should have maybe gone through the newspaper and submitted your application through different formats, or gone through the different platforms to look for a job, or went through to a department store or an organization to look for or submit your application. So those are the things that we call active job search.
And you could see there. Okay, we do need to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue to unpack this and discuss. Let's take a short break and we will be right back. If you want to comment, ask, share, just send us a WhatsApp at 061-895-1019.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back in the middle of a fascinating discussion about finances and about our future as a community, as a nation, in talking about employment, unemployment, and everything. And I want to ask you, Michelle, we just heard Desiree, and she said one of the things we didn't focus on, but it sounded like to me that there's, out of the full population of the people in South Africa in the age of the workforce, which is 15 to 64, which is something, if we have time, I want to clarify with Desiree regarding, because she mentioned also about statistics about child labor, and 15 is already not child labor, so that's a point on its own that I think we need to look at. Desiree just mentioned that there's around 2% of the whole population that have given up completely in getting a job. If we look at 1 million people and an average of, let's say, 50 million, right? If we take all the numbers, and maybe my numbers are completely off, that's fine. But there is a large population. 2% of our population are completely have given up, don't believe they'll ever find a job, don't believe they'll ever be able to go from there. How does that come? And what can we do as parents to ensure or support our children to not be in that desperate situation? And I'll add another question to it. You know, obviously part of financial planning is saving for the future, planning, building your own wealth, etc. Do you know anything about what percentage of people are even thinking of that? So even the people that do have jobs, are they in survival mode or are they actually in any position to plan their future?
So a very small percentage of the population is privileged enough to plan for their future. Generally, I find people are in survival mode, unfortunately. South Africa is not a country that supports its citizens, and I don't mean in terms of welfare organizations, but it's not easy to make a living here, and it's not easy for a person with minimal skills to make a living here. Things are pretty tough. I mean, if you look at those...
Yeah, but you need to separate between people that are barely making it and don't have any way to plan their future.
Right.
And between people that it's also a concept of mindset.
Right.
Even people that are making a very small fortune or very small amount of money potentially could save 2% of their money, 3%, 5%.
Absolutely.
So what can we do about the mindset?
Okay. So I think the mindset needs to start from a very, very young age. So I will talk about age 0 to 12 being a foundation stage. So the goals are to build a financial cushion for education, for future opportunities, and teach basic money concepts.
Okay.
Key steps, if the parents are able to open a tax-efficient savings or an investment account. And in South Africa, there's a wonderful vehicle, the tax-free savings account, which you could open for your child. That's one thing. Or invest in low-cost ETFs or balanced funds. So opening that up. And starting an education fund, particularly for tertiary or university education.
But you're talking more about parents investing for children.
Right.
I'm asking, what can we
teach them?
What do we need to teach our kids?
So 0 to 12, introduce piggy banks and save, spend, share jars, perhaps. Read child-friendly books about money. Then ages 13 to 18, it's about habits and awareness. The goals is to build strong money values, introduce investing and budgeting. So give an allowance or earn for core system. Encourage budgeting. Explain the difference between wants and needs in a child. Open a youth savings or investment account. And teach the magic of compound interest, which is showing how small savings can grow over time due to the magic of compound interest. And you could use visual tools or calculators for that. And if possible, introduce part-time work, which teaches responsibility, makes them empowered. And, you know, once they earn their own money, I can assure you they're not going to want to spend it so easily.
That's for sure. But I'm wondering from Desiree's side, are you seeing any statistics about relevancy of how young the child is when they go into labor? Meaning, and I'm talking about a child who's at school and, you know, legally is allowed to work on holidays or legally is allowed to do part-time hustle or something, obviously without not doing their, keeping to their obligations. Is that something that will encourage, or are we seeing any statistics about it that will keep them longer in the workforce or not necessarily?
We are talking about the module that I mentioned earlier, that we collect data also on the child labor module, right? Now the reason for that module is basically not to inform policy in terms of savings by children. And, you know, it is mainly to measure the incidence of child labor into our households, into our different provinces. Now, I heard you earlier mentioning that, a 15-year-old, that person is a child, of course.
Completely.
But, my son is a child. He's 16 now. But we are basically guided by the ILO standards on child labor, as well as on the definition of the working age population, like I have mentioned earlier, that the recommendation is to measure labor force in terms of employment and unemployment of the people that are 15 years and above. Now already you can see 15, 16, 17 is included in that group. Now in terms of child labor, again, in terms of the standard on child labor, the recommendation says that a child labor measurement should be conducted of the children that are 5 years, from 5 years to 17, right? Now, the basic conditions of employment of South Africa says that a child is anybody who is below 18, and anybody can work as long as they are 15 years and above, or they have completed the I think it's grade 10, the secondary school, which is grade 10. Yes. So anybody from that age, you are either 15 or you have completed grade 10, you are allowed to work as it is defined in the basic conditions of employment. As long as the kind of work you do is not hazardous to your health, does not jeopardize your schooling or your education, and it's not harmful to your health, you know, and right. also in terms of education. So that's basically what we are measuring.
Do we have child labor under 15 happening here? I'm talking about illegal child labor.
We do have, but I think we'll have, because we are in the field now. This is August. We are still in the field, and the next child labor module will be produced in the next year. So I cannot give any statistics now on that. But we do have children who are exposed, that are working and exposed to hazardous substances, either working, and because those are some of the things that define child labor, working at heights, working in hazardous conditions, working at night, and those types. But then you must also remember, not every work that children are doing is hazardous to their health. For example, household chores. I mean, if I want my children to start saving, let's say, for example, or ensuring that they work for the money that they want from me, I might want to give them some kind of household chores and maybe give them pocket money, working for pocket money, something like that. But that is nothing that is harmful to their health. Household chores like washing the dishes, helping cleaning the house, you know, nothing hectic. Those are some of the activities that it sort of grooms the child to know that.
That's very healthy behaviors, and that's something that's very good to do.
Yes.
And is that even registered, like collected in data of child labor?
Yes, we do collect household chores. It is included in the module where we ask children if they had during the reference period, if they did any household chores, and we do name the type of household chores that they had participated in, including the hazardous ones that are going to be used to define whether the children were in child labor or not in child labor.
Okay. So considering all these stats, Michelle, I want to ask you, and we're hearing what's happening, and I think the one thing that is refreshing is the openness and honesty in the reality, because we can't manage without that actual reality. And before we even go into debates that we were hearing in the past of the accuracy and things and what certain banks think or whatever it is, I want to ask you as a financial advisor, what are your thoughts about the youth? Where do you think they're going to be in 5 years from now? Are they going to be sustainable, stable, managing financially? Are we heading chaos?
I'm not sure. It's all related to South African economy. and opportunities for employment, also in terms of education. I mean, let's be honest, in general, our educational system has failed. A lot of young people, unless you can afford to send your child to a good private school, government schools and the expectations there, I mean, apart from some good a couple of good schools, they have failed the youth.
So I have this debate with officials from the educational department, and I've had this discussion on the show a lot. What I'm wondering, Desiree, from your side, are you seeing a difference in employment and in ability to work between kids that had completed schools, did not complete schools, what sectors of school, private schooling, general school, public schooling, etc.? Or you're actually not seeing the implications of the educational system in the workforce?
I think if you look at the stats that we published in the first quarter of this year, even in the previous quarters, because we usually will also include our unemployment rate by education levels. Now, in the first quarter, the overall unemployment rate by education level, we see those without matric having the highest unemployment rate in the country. And then those with the graduates, meaning those that went to universities with degrees and masters and honors and PhDs, they have the lowest unemployment rate of about 11.7%, while those without matric have an unemployment rate of 39%. Now, if you take this one to the youth, you find that it's a similar trend that we are seeing with the whole population 15 years and above, or 15 to 64. The similar trend you are seeing with the youth, where the youth, as much as we see that the youth unemployment rate is higher than the adult unemployment rate, we still see that the unemployment rate of those without matric, even among the youth, is still high, recorded at about just over 50%. And though the graduates, the youth with degrees those are the unemployment rate is about 23%. So you see, it is still a bit high in terms of those that went to universities to get their degrees, their masters, their honors, and their doctorates. They're still recording the highest unemployment rate of about 23% versus the adults population. So we're still seeing all these disparities among the youth. And I think maybe just also to mention, I mean, earlier we mentioned that of the population that is inactive, about 2% are discouraged, right? Now, those that are discouraged.
No, 2% of the full population.
This is.
Because you said a million compared to 8.1, I think.
8.2.
It's 3.5 million. It's 3.5 million that are discouraged.
Right. 3.5? Right. Oh, wow. Out of a population of 10 that are now unemployed.
Okay. Let's not confuse the terms here now.
Was it not 8.2 unemployed?
Okay. 8.2 million are unemployed, right?
Right.
16 million are not economically active. They are inactive, right? And 3.5 of the 16.5 million are discouraged.
I get it. Okay.
Yes. You get it now.
So no. Okay. So that's 2%. Yeah. Okay.
That's 2% of the not economically active population, not of the total population.
Okay.
If you take it to the total working age population, it will be much lower, because we are talking about the 41 million working age population. Right.
Yeah. I didn't realize the 3.5 million. Okay. So let's just take one break. We do need to take another ad break, and when we come back, we'll continue this discussion.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 FM, Chaychen Lechor Rabbi G. We are back in a very important discussion here with Desiree Menamele, who is the Chief Director of Labor Statistics in Statistics South Africa, as well as Financial Advisor Michelle Benatar. And I do want to take a bit of an optimistic twist for a moment, okay? And I want to focus a bit on the people that are working, and that there is a strong population in South Africa that are hard workers, that are really waking up every morning and keeping to their responsibilities and really respected and admired. And we want more of that, definitely. And my question to you is, in that population, and I don't know, Desiree, if you have statistics about this, but I'm going to ask before the statistics, are the people working managing to meet ends financially, and what can they do to manage their finances better to actually also enjoy the labor that they're doing?
Okay, so I'm going to look at a specific type of example. Let's say you have somebody who has graduated from university and has got a job. Now, I would suggest that in their first year of employment, if it's possible to stay at home and save with their parents, in other words, stay at home with their parents if it's viable and save as much money as possible so that they can start building up a fund towards maybe the goal of buying a little flat and whatever is necessary for that flat, I would say that would be an ideal situation. Even spending 2 years, if possible, living at home and but with the intent of building up capital so that they can start life with a deposit to put towards a flat. And also engage a financial planner to start from the word go, putting money away towards a savings and understanding that from starting from, let's say, 23, 24, making compound interest work for them in
which is very difficult
way.
Because you know they feel like they're working so they can go out to have a burger sometimes with a friend or you know go out to movie night or whatever
and
it is.
There's
that's
nothing
there.
Wrong with a certain percentage of that money going towards indulging and
well,
enjoying
there is
life
if you're not saving.
No, that is if you're not savings. But I believe that if parents have taught from the word go, from the time they were little, a culture of work ethic and putting money away and understanding the difference between wants and needs. I think those kind of people, and I've met those young people who are responsible and want to start planning.
It looks like in the last 20 years, the concept of building wealth is not there so much. Like people are more, the youngsters are more like, I'm earning, I'm enjoying it, and try to live at the same lifestyle that they grew up with their parents, without understanding that their parents worked 20 years for it, and now they need to start from that starting point and not expect to continue the same
level. It depends what the parents modeled. If the parents modeled a behavior of just, you know, as the money comes in, you spend it, of course, on necessary things, but sometimes on unnecessary things, then you're modeling an example which the kids are going to use. But if you model...
Why is the question necessary and unnecessary instead of do we have money for it or not?
I agree with you. It's
should
very
be
much...
Asked.
Exactly. I mean, people are all about, you know, satisfying the immediate desire. And not waiting
for
it.
So
yes, and accumulating debt at a very costly price.
Exactly.
So I think,
on that note, I just want to ask Desiree, do we have any statistics about people that are employed? Are the salaries livable? Can people actually meet ends in what professions? Yes, in what professions not? What's happening?
Unfortunately, I don't have the statistics here with me of the specifically on the media, because we do publish also median earnings for different what you call different industries and different occupations. I mean, if you look at the statistics in terms of employed persons and also which industries that they are employed in, I mean, we know that community and social services employs most of the people that are in employment. I think about 23% of the population of working age is employed in that industry. And we also see that, I mean, when you look at the, in terms of the different occupations, we also have what we call elementary occupation. Elementary occupation specifically talks about unskilled labor. It's more of unskilled labor where a person doesn't need a lot of thinking to do the job. You know, it includes things like domestic work as well. As much as in terms of what we publish in our reports, we exclude domestic work from the elementary work, but it is the whole because of the importance of domestic work in the country. But those are the type of occupation, like shoe shining, for example, you know, and it's one of the occupation that employs a whole lot of people that are employed. Community and social services, which basically it's an industry that includes it includes myself, government. Includes like education, health, you know, but it also includes personal services, you know, like the hairdressers
and therapists,
you know. Yeah, you know. So that's the industry that employs a whole lot of people. And then we also have finance, the industry finance and other business services. Most of the people that are employed there are employed in other business activities. It includes debt collectors, labor brokers, you know, labor brokers.
Yeah, funding, okay, like in employee agencies. Okay, I get it.
Yes,
so we can see the different categories. I just unfortunately, as we run out of time, we do need to take one more short ad break, last ad break for the hour, and then we will continue and start heading towards the end of the hour today. A short break, and we will be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back. We're actually at the end of a very important discussion, which we are wrapping up. I think we went through a lot. And I want to ask the final question of the show, and I'm going to ask both my guests the same question. And that is, on a personal level, what do you wish and hope the people of South Africa knew for a better future? Desiree.
What do I wish?
Yes.
Can you repeat the question, please?
What do you wish and hope for a better South Africa? What's your dream for the future of this country?
So I'm responding on behalf of myself. Not
yes, this is a personal question. Yes. To end off, we end off with a personal question. What do you wish and hope happens for South Africa?
I wish there's a whole lot of people that are employed that have, a plate of food on their table every night, where there's less poverty and inequality is reduced, and all the
Amazing.
Households, everybody goes to work to bed with a full stomach. Mm-hmm.
Please God, we will get there as a nation. Michelle, what do you wish and hope happens for a better future?
I wish the same. And when they are in that situation of being employed, and well, then for them to acquire financial literacy and avoid debt, establish early investments and emergency funds, and also take care of risk management with their very first salary.
Amazing. So please God, that should also come into play. Thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you to Michelle Benatar, who's a financial advisor here in studio with me. And thank you so much to Desiree Minamele, who is the Chief Director of Labor Statistics, Statistics South Africa. Desiree, it was very fascinating, all the information you had to share. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Good afternoon. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you, Senna, for putting in these interviews in place. And thank you to our listeners that are here week after week learning about new topics, new discussions. Stay safe, and we will be back next week, 2 to 3, with the same show and a new discussion.